Vault campaign that turned your mobile phone, even your TV, into a spy in your own midst, and there's much more. The government soon realized Julian Assange had to be crushed and silenced. Years ago, the Department of Defense issued orders to smear his name. He was falsely accused of everything from rape to abusing his pet cat. Their smear campaign was largely effective, with many leftists and liberals now giving only lukewarm support to Julian Assange, who sits in solitary in Britain's infamous Belmarsh prison.
And we have to leave it right there. But if you enjoy and appreciate a program like Law and Disorder, please, by all means, show your support right now by calling 212-209-2950. The name of the book, which is written by Heidi Boghossian, I Have Nothing to Hide, and 20 Other Myths About Surveillance and Privacy. 212-209-2950 is the number to call to show your support, or go to give to WBAI.org. Law and Disorder is usually on at 9 a.m. on Mondays here at WBAI. Okay, it is 2:31 p.m. Stay tuned for Ecologic. It's coming up right about now. So stay tuned.
It whole again. I believe we can make it whole. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry. For the children, makes me wanna. We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for August 27th, 2021.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Recently, there have been some victories on reducing poison pesticide use, nationally and here in New York City.
We'll ask our guests to introduce themselves so you have a voice to go with the name. First, Paula.
I don't think we've got Paula on the line yet. Let's introduce the others.
Okay. And Kristen and Angel.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Kristen Schaefer, and I'm Executive Director with Pesticide Action Network.
And good afternoon on my end. This is Angel Garcia, organizing director with Californians for Pest Reform. Checking in from California.
Okay. And Reggie, we need you to get Paula
she
on
is
the line.
On.
Okay, Paula.
Okay, well, let's talk about local victories first. Paula, are you there?
Reggie, I think we
she
don't
was
have
on.
Yet.
She's on. She's connected.
She said she got dropped.
All right. Okay. Well, Kristen, tell us about what happened nationally recently.
Sure.
And we're talking about victories today. So this is what a wonderful show.
It's always nice to have a victory to celebrate, and this is a big one for us and for literally millions of children and farm workers all across the country. This is a big victory. So. What happened, folks might have seen this in the news, so an insecticide called chlorpyrifos was banned by the EPA in food production, all uses in food production. And this is a widely used insecticide that's used on a lot of commonly crops that kids commonly eat, a lot of fruits and vegetables. And this has been a long battle. It's been basically more than 20 years. 20 years ago, there was enough science that EPA pulled the use of this chemical from products in homes. And so we, together with a lot of partners around the country, basically took EPA to court a few years after that, saying, hey, if this pesticide is so toxic and we know that it damages children's developing brains, why should kids in rural areas continue to be exposed, and why should farm workers continue to be exposed because use is continued in agriculture? And so we sued in 2007. Fast forward to 2017, EPA finally had been forced by the courts to take a look at the science and was on the verge of banning it nationwide when we had a change in administration. And in 2017, basically EPA said, oh, never mind, we're not going to do this. And so, of course, we took them to court again. And meanwhile, organizing across the country ramped up in states that were taking decisions to protect kids and farm workers and rural families from this chemical. And that really laid the kind of created the political momentum that led to the decision that we had last week, which is really a huge victory. And I talk more about kind of the sequence and the history, but I want to hand it off to Angel to talk about California as one of several states that banned this chemical before the decision last week, and that kind of laid the groundwork for this national ban. So Angel, I'll toss it to you.
Thank you, Kristen. And again, pleasure to be here. I think the California case really illustrates the power or people power. And this comes through in the form of community organizing at the local level. So in 2017, as Christian pointed out, it was critical to get people behind this collective effort. Now, we're talking about an insecticide that harm kids, brain development, that was heavily used, and not just in the U.S., but in California alone, just upwards of £1 million per year at one point. And so, but some of the most alarming things here for Californians was that this chemical was disproportionately used around and near frontline and Latino communities. And so having that be the reality of our farm working communities in rural parts of California, Central Coast, Central Valley, was really instrumental in really having our most impacted communities be leading this this effort at the community level and at the and also at the statewide collective effort. So essentially what we ended up doing here in California was really galvanizing the energy around, as Christian pointed out, the momentum that this chemical was just becoming more publicly visible. And so it was instrumental to really connect with not just Latino or farm working communities, but also with the consumers. And so what we ended up doing here at the local level in various parts throughout the state of California was creating local coalitions, local pressure campaigns that really targeted the ongoing long-term impacts that Club Parafalls pose. And so, but one of the turning points in all of this back in 2017 was what we noticed with our organizing was breaking the isolation. And so that was a turning point, because before that we knew that this stuff was really heavily used in our communities. But one of the things that really I feel was also as critical was our organizing at the ground. Our grassroots efforts really broke that isolation, because we were connecting with nurses, we were connecting with teachers, connecting with consumers, connecting with parents, farm workers that were seeing this trend of people developing or students noticing this trend of high ADHD, high autism rates in their respective community. And so when we shared this information, we launched an on-the-ground education campaign that really sort of disseminated this very important information and really connected the dots for the different sectors that were being impacted simultaneously throughout the state of California. And so I think that really breaking that isolation was key. Getting that information, that education out was also very important. And at the end of the day, the collective unity of this this work was very instrumental in all of this.
And Paula, why don't you introduce yourself so we have a voice go with a name, and tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Hi, I'm Paula Rogovin, and I live here in New Jersey, but I taught for 44 years in New York City public schools and always did research with my kindergarten and first grade students. So in 2014, we were just learning about tomatoes. They wanted to learn about tomatoes, so that's what we did, and they asked lots of questions, and that's how it began. We interviewed we were making tomato sauce with the gym teacher, whose child was also in my class, and we were wondering, I asked the children why he washed his hands, and a couple of kids, and why he washed the tomatoes, and a couple of kids thought, well, he washed the tomatoes because they might have been dirty from the ground, but one of the children said, my mommy said that there's some stuff on the tomatoes. And that was what I was looking for, that opening to learn about pesticides. And that launched, with kindergarten children, a several-month study about inquiry about pesticides, and particularly the pesticides that are used on crops and gardens and lawns. And so we interviewed some grandparents from Long Island who were involved in the struggle to ban pesticides in their town. And then when our city councilman, Ben Kalos, happened to be in the school, I told the principal, bring him into our classroom, bring him in. And he was interested in what the kids were saying, so he invited them to City Hall. So we went to City Hall a few months later, and he asked, the kids were dancing around City Hall. It was empty at that point, the council chambers. And then he called them over. He said, what do you want me to do? And they said, ban toxic pesticides. Use only nature's pesticides. Pass a law. Well, those were words from their play. They had written a play, because whenever we did research, we wanted to teach other people. So we wrote a play, did it for the families and for their whole school. Well, anyway, the councilman Kalo said to the children, I promise I'll try. And during that next year, the World Health Organization made a directive that and declared that glyphosate, which is in Roundup, is a carcinogen. And that enabled the legislation to really move forward. So then that year, 2015, the councilman called our school and asked if we could have a press conference in the schoolyard, which we had the next, shortly after that. And he announced that he and several other city council members were introducing Intro 0800, which a couple years later became Intro 1524. The kids 60 of them and 60 parents went to City Hall and testified in the form of a skit. So they were holding signs, which is not legal in City Hall, but they were doing a skit, and they were babies. They were children, little kids, you know? So they were not babies, but they were allowed into City Hall with their signs. They did their skit. There were people from the environmental activist community, from different organizations. We had people from Mount Sinai who are doing so much fabulous research about pesticides. And so combined, we made a big impression, but we didn't win. And it took a couple more years. It's so hard to get, as you all know, so hard to get a law passed. But we fought, and the children, some of the children stayed with it and testified again shortly before the pandemic shutdown. And we worked very hard. But I want to say that one of the keys to getting this passed, I think, was the issue of environmental racism and environmental justice, because there was a report put out by the Black Institute that documented, with city documents, the use of Roundup and toxic pesticides in environmental justice communities versus in parks and public spaces in white communities. And there was a disproportionate use of pesticides in Harlem and other communities of color. And when the city said, we're not doing any more anything except work on COVID, we said, this is about COVID and the impacts from the use of pesticides impacts the rate of people getting COVID. Anyway, on April 22nd, 2021, that was Earth Day, the bill passed the City Council in New York City unanimously. And there was a lot of work by a lot of people. It was very, very exciting. Now our fight is to get it fully implemented and to get the city to transition to organic land management, which is another big fight. But we will win that, too, along with people like you around the country.
How old are those kindergartners now?
I'm so happy to be working with all of you.
How old are those kindergartners now?
Pardon me? Seventh grade, I think, right? The kindergarten children started in kindergarten, but they went up to seventh grade.
I can't hear you.
Oh, Paul,
they're in
having
seventh
trouble.
The children are in seventh grade. Yes.
Okay.
And some of them are still involved.
So in our last few minutes of the show. There's so many, I know it goes so fast. The miracle of live radio. there's a good reason why we had you all on the show at the same time today. Victories, fighting pesticides. Thank you, all of you, each of you. And your focus on the environmental justice community is so important, because that really has to be factored in. Kristen?
Yeah, I just wanted to...
You need to mute yourself on Zoom, Kristen, please. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry about that. I was going to say that I wanted to pick up on what Paula was saying about it really being an environmental justice issue, because we've seen that in communities across the country. And just to, I was thinking about the many years ago, I think it was 2014 here in California, there was a report came out from the Department of Public Health that looked at school children that were being exposed to pesticides across the state. And sure enough, the vast majority of those school kids were Latino children in the Central Valley, where the use of pesticides is the highest. And that led actually to a lot of organizing with communities to win buffer zones around those schools so that chemicals couldn't be used within a quarter mile of those schools, because children, as we know, are especially vulnerable to these chemicals. Their bodies are still growing. They don't have the defense mechanisms that we do as adults. And so their exposures are especially problematic to many of these chemicals.
simply the same dose in a smaller body is going to have a bigger effect. To say nothing of the fact their metabolism is going fast and all the rest.
Yeah, their immune system is still developing. Well, you don't want to have poison in the middle of that immune system. It's just there's so many good reasons to not poison kids. You wouldn't think that any politician anywhere would need to be explained. You don't want to poison children, okay? Pesticides are poison. That's why they work, because they're poisonous. It's like, sometimes what seems to be a no-brainer seems to be no brains.
There really is no positive side. If you made a list of pros and cons, there's really no pro. Anyway, why don't you, can you briefly give your websites, Paula, first? Website, how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, parksforkidsnyc.org, parksforkidsnyc.org.
And Christian and Angel?
Sure. For us, it's PANA.org, PANNA.org. That's Pesticide Action Network North America, PANA. And I encourage people to look for, there's a join us button, and you can sign up to get action alerts and blogs and information about how to stay involved around all kinds of chemicals, pesticides.
Yeah. What I like about...
Wait, we haven't heard from Angel yet.
For us, it's going to be pesticidereform.org. And just a quick point on environmental racism. It's something that we definitely need to call out more directly, and we definitely invite allies across the nation, across the state and across the state to really start helping us address this ongoing situation.
Angel, repeat that website.
Yes, of course. It's going to be pesticidereform.org.
And one of the things I like about all these organizations is you do education and you do policy change. So it's not a case of, now that I know that, what do I do?
As usual, guys, time flies when we're having fun, and we need to wrap it up. But thanks for joining us. Those of our listeners who is everybody muted?
Yeah.
Okay. Those are listeners who are online, they can go to www.parksforkidsnyc.org. That's parksforkidsnyc.org and www.panna.net to find out more. You can tune in next Friday. Next Friday, Ecologic is going to be discussing the biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, which are routinely exempted from climate change agreements. That's the military. And you can rely on Ecologic to bring you news of upcoming events and people making a difference. This is a most important role for Ecologic and WBAI-FM.
You can listen to this show again and any of our past shows and get environmental news on a variety of topics leading up to COP15 in Glasgow, Scotland, for example, at www.ecoradio.org.
That's www.ecoradio.org.
Also, to find out when our shows are posted, those of you online, please sign up for our email list. And those of you on Facebook, please like our page. Enter Eco-Logic.
There are many video and audio versions of Ecologic available to you for a donation to WBAI. Go to www.give2wbai.org and choose Ecologic on the drop-down menu after you click on next.
And of course, we would love you to become a member in the name of your favorite radio program, Ecologic.
Win-win.
And we always appreciate our excellent engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Friday, September 3rd at 2:30 p.m. when Ecologic discusses the military.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. School districts in Florida will be allowed to impose mask requirements after a district judge today blocked an executive order from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis banning them. Leon County Circuit Judge John Cooper ruled in favor of a group of parents who sued over the executive order, arguing that it was unconstitutional. He ruled the order is without legal authority and is by definition arbitrary and capricious. Cooper issued an injunction stopping the Department of Education from taking any action against local districts that require masks in schools without a parental opt-out. The Supreme Court has rejected the Biden administration's latest moratorium on evictions. The majority opinion, which was unsigned, said the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had exceeded its authority. The decision puts hundreds of thousands of tenants at risk of losing shelter, while the administration struggles to speed the flow of billions of dollars in federal funding to people who are behind in rent because of the coronavirus pandemic and its associated economic hardship. Only about $5.1 billion of the $46.5 billion in aid had been dispersed by the end of July. More than 100,000 people in the U.S. are currently in the hospital with COVID-19, the highest level in 8 months. The spike is being driven by the highly contagious Delta variant among unvaccinated people. Levels are highest across the South. Florida is the state with the most hospitalizations, with more than 17,000. Texas is next with more than 14,000. The surge is pushing hospital systems to extreme measures as they struggle to meet the demand for care. New Mexico established a waiting list for intensive care unit beds for the first time ever, and top health authorities warned that the state is a week away from rationing health care. Some Ohio hospitals are planning to halt elective procedures that require an overnight stay. In Idaho, state officials are asking people to volunteer to keep medical facilities operational. Following the January 6th insurrection, more than 570 people have been charged in what the Justice Department has called the largest investigation in U.S. history. But federal judges have begun to question whether rioters who have admitted to storming the Capitol building are being charged appropriately. Judges are asking prosecutors why defendants are not paying a larger share for the damages caused to the Capitol, why the court can't order additional ongoing supervision of defendants beyond their surprisingly brief prison terms, and why offenders are escaping more substantial charges. Chief U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell suggested that more offenders should face the felony charge of obstructing the official certification of Joe Biden's electoral victory. The highest court in Maryland is reviewing the case of a teenager convicted for his role in the D.C. sniper killing spree. Lee Boyd Malvo was 17 when he joined John Allen Muhammad in a rampage throughout the District, Maryland, and Virginia that left 10 people dead and 3 wounded in 2002. The Court of Appeals has granted a bypass review of Malvo's case, along with 2 other convicts serving life sentences for crimes committed as juveniles. Malvo was sentenced to 6 life sentences without parole for the Maryland killings. His lawyers argue that his punishment goes against a 2012 Supreme Court ruling barring mandatory life sentences without parole for juvenile offenders. Currently in